You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Old New Borrowed Blue, the Blue Room podcast that talks about some of the nicer things about being an Evertonian. I'm delighted this week to be joined by Roger Armstrong, a name and a voice I'm sure anyone who's ever listened to an Everton podcast will be familiar with. Roger, thanks for coming on. Can you just give yourself a little introduction for maybe people who don't know, and just tell us your first game, the first game you remember and or the first game you went to?
Okay, yeah, Les, thanks very much for inviting me on. It's lovely to be on a podcast talking about some positive stuff, talking about just football, not boring business shit. And so thank you. It's a blessed relief in these times of anxiety. People might know me from sort of early days of Everton Business Matters, which we did initially on the Blue Room. Dave and the others did that with Blainsey and the Esk. During COVID, I did my own little Blue Half podcast, which wasn't a And a little bit in common with this in that I asked people what their credentials were, so we didn't get any spies in the camp. I had like a different guest every week for a while. And nowadays I do, just bits and pieces if people want to hear what I've got to say, which is normally a bit negative. So today it's a bit positive and I want to be positive, and this will scare people because they might not have heard the positive side of me. So I'm looking forward to that.
Good stuff. So just before we started recording, you said the first game you remember was actually the first game you went to. So always do this with everyone, just to get a little feel about the sort of their initial Evertonian experience. So what was your first game?
Well, and how old they are. So my first game, I remember it was Boxing Day. I mean, I had to look it up in terms of the date on the Everton results website, but it was Boxing Day 1973. We played Man City at home. We beat them 2-0. And I would have been 9 at the time. So I'm going to be 60 this year, folks. There you go. It's out. It's in public. And I remember my dad getting the paper out in the kitchen and showing me the fixtures. They were listed in the paper. And he pointed at the Everton game and he said, "Do you want to go?" And I thought, well, obviously, yes, let's go. And I remember I listened to Gavin's one in this series, and it was similar because obviously – back in the day, it was all black and white. Now, we didn't have a colour telly in those days. I'm pretty certain we didn't. And so the thing I remember first and foremost was there was this sort of blackboard type arrangement on the main stand, on the back of the main stand, that listed where there were tickets available, right? Because you just rocked up. And the different prices of the different enclosures, you know, the paddock and the stand and the top balcony and this, that and the other. And I remember this massive blackboard and where were we going to sit? And I think we sat in the main stand, I think. I do have a little aside there, which has just reminded me of a cup replay against Southampton back in the day when we were in what is now the family enclosure and stood up. And it was a cup replay midweek. Very, very busy, big crush going in there. We won 1-0. Eamon O'Keefe scored the winner in extra time. Keegan and Shannon were playing for Man City. And we were stood up there. I'm not the tallest man, But there was a guy next to me who had two kids, and he had the kids on milk crates down the side. And when O'Keefe scored the winner in extra time, he flung his arms back like this and knocked both kids off the milk crates. He had one either side of him. That's an aside. We sat down for this first game. I think we were towards the Gladys Street end, and I remember walking up, and the colour, just like Gavin said, you know, the colour, the grass was green, the goals were white, and the shirts were blue. And I'm pretty sure City wore their red and black, either the diagonal or the stripes.
Yeah,
we beat them 2-0. Goals from Hurst and Buckley. Ian Hurst. Do I want to say Ian Hurst? No. What was his first name?
John Hurst.
John Hurst. John Hurst, of course. Ian Hurst was someone I worked with, for Christ's sake. John Hurst and Buckley scored the goals. And yeah, that was my first game, 1973, Boxing Day. And then 35 years later, I took my youngest, Glenn, to his first game. And it was against Man City and we beat them as well. So there you go.
Lucky omens.
Julian Lescott scored the goal 1-0 on the 12th of January, 2008.
Nice bit of symmetry there. I love that.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. I've got the complete sort of opposite experience. From my first game, we got beat 4-1 against Spurs. My dad's first game, they won. And both my kids' first games, they won. So I got the short story. Yeah. did end the season with a title win, though. So, you know, can't really complain.
Yeah. 84-5. Yes, indeed.
Yeah, can't really complain about that. And speaking of which, that leads us nicely into the first of your players that you've picked today. So this is the old category. So this is your favourite former player. Who is?
There's only one for me. It's Neville Southall. I mean, it's very, very clear. You know, he's the stats alone. I mean, look, okay, I've gone for favourite because I think he's the best we've ever had. And he is my favourite because he's the most reliable. You know, and Everton are totally unreliable. So quite how we got Neville for so long, I don't know. He's just magnificent. And I think you appreciate him after the fact rather than at the time because you just relied on him. He was magnificent. You know, I had the pleasure of him. He came on my Blue Half podcast and he was extraordinary and he wouldn't shut up, which was great, you know.
Yeah.
I expected him to just have 20 minutes and he just kept on talking. And earlier than that, I remember probably now about 10 years ago, somebody told me that he was in the church in St. Luke's signing a book or whatever he was doing. And I was there with my dad and we went up and saw him. And he's an icon. He was a, you know, obviously much bigger than I remembered him. He's sort of padded out a little, but the smile on my dad's face when he met him as well was just something I'll never forget. He's just such a brilliant, brilliant goalkeeper. You know, the guy had 751 appearances. Mm. I had to check my stats because, you know, I'm following in the likes of Gavin. You've got to get your numbers right.
Oh, yeah, you've got
751 games. I mean, 217 clear of the second most appearances, which is Brian Lebone. He kept 269 clean sheets. I mean, that's one in three, you know?
Yeah.
He kept 31 clean sheets in that season, 84-5. Not all the league games, of course, because I'm sure we conceded goals in more than seven of those games. And I think when you look at stats can tell you any number of things, of course. But the most surprising one out of his 750 appearances, 751 for Everton, how many were in Europe?
Oh, God, would have been about a handful, 15. No, not even that.
Very good. 13.
13.
13.
Yeah.
I mean, that's mad. 13. And, you know, he wasn't a superstar when we signed him. Everyone knows the story and the bin man and all of that. We signed him from Bury for 150 grand and he didn't come in and make a real impact immediately. Yeah. He got loaned out to Port Vale and, you know, just after we'd got humped 5-0 in the derby.
Was he one of Kendall's magnificent seven? He was in that. Was he in that group?
Yes.
He was,
yes,
wasn't he?
Must have. Well, he was signed in. He made his debut in 1981. So whether he's actually in that Magnificent Seven, now you've got me. I knew you'd come up with the question. I wouldn't know the answer to. I think he was actually. I think he must have been. He must have been. But he had to have a battle with Jim Arnold for the shirt.
Yeah.
But you know, once he came back, he was loaned out for 83-4. Once he came back. Virtually from 83-4, he was ever present, right? And he had two sequences, 136 games in a row from October of 83 to October of 85, so kind of two full seasons and a bit.
Yeah.
And then 215 games in a row from 1988 to 1993. He saw everything with us, of course. You know, he saw the Wimbledon game. Ridiculous that, you know, his honours, he won five trophies. That's all two leagues and two FA Cups, 84 and 95, and the Cup Winners' Cup. And of course, if he hadn't been injured at the end of 86, you know, we'd have done the double, wouldn't we?
Feels that way, doesn't it? It
feels that way. I mean, no disrespect to Bobby Mims, but, you know.
Yeah.
Neville was so reliable in a way that the only other goalkeeper I can remember in my sort of footballing viewing past would be Schmeichel, who was like him, as good as him, as dependable. Yeah. Brilliant at coming out, made himself huge, made the most ridiculous saves, you know, was able somehow to adjust his position in midair. You know, that team, he made that team great, I think. We can all argue about who those players were in the 80s, but, you know, he was such a reliable, reliable guy at the back that is it a coincidence that those games he missed at the end of that 85-6 season saw us just fall short? And I think he was the best. And you know, his personality was such that you can imagine him. You know, Reedy still calls him keeper, doesn't he? And I think some of the other players do, but they don't call him Nev, you know, they just call him keeper. And I can confirm that he wasn't at the 1995 Cup final party, because as early Blue Room listeners may remember, I was at the 1995 Cup final party because I managed to gate crash it. And Neville wasn't there. Big Dunk was there without his shirt on and dancing on the table, and all the other players were there, but he wasn't there, I'm afraid. I think Neville was halfway to Llandudno with a pint of milk in his hand, probably.
Yeah, he always said that, didn't he, about sort of he never got involved in that side of things, really, because he's always been teetotal. So he never really got involved in that side of things, did he, at all?
No. And he was real, obviously, you know, there was him and Ratcliffe and Ian Rush as the sort of three Welsh guys.
Yeah.
He had 91 caps for Wales, but that Welsh team with those players never really made it to a major tournament. Extraordinary, you know.
Yeah, because they had Mark Hughes as well, didn't he, in that team?
Yeah, they would have had him too. And I think that, you know, he was good mates with Rushy, you know, although Ian Rush tended to score goals past him annoyingly. Yeah. And he was... Yeah, so dependable. And just, if you look back at all the players we've had, I think this may be a hot take, but I think Neville Southall is about the only Everton player who has a case to be in an all-time World 11.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. If you're saying post-war, if you're going sort of beyond that, Dean as well.
Yeah, maybe. Probably. I mean, you've got to put Dean in for his stats.
I definitely think post-war, I don't think you can argue with that, because he, you know, as you say, his record for Everton, the fact that he was definitely the best in the world in the mid-80s, without a shadow of a doubt, he was the best keeper in the world. But, you know, without dwelling on this, the European ban, it takes a lot, it took a lot of the spotlight off English clubs, well, all the spotlight off English clubs, and any players playing in England, which is why you got the likes of Gary Stevens and Trevor Stephen moving up to Scotland to go and get European football that way.
Yeah.
I don't think he gets the recognition he deserved. Probably a lot to do with that. And also the fact he stayed at Everton. You know, you say 751 games. There's a couple of times you could have left. There's obviously the famous story where Alex Ferguson phones him up, puts the phone down thinking it's Andy Gray taking the piss. But what do you think it was? I mean, obviously, we don't know. But what do you think it was that kept him at Everton? Because, he saw the highest highs and almost, well, pretty much the lowest lows, definitely at the time, to be in goal for that Wimbledon game. So what do you think kept him there?
I think he's really enigmatic, you know. When I spoke to him, I was completely in awe, but I don't think I understood him any more from having had an hour's conversation with him. You know, he's got eclectic taste. He uses social media right now quite effectively to promote causes. He's famously said, you know, you don't enter a competition unless you think you can win it. So at the start of every season, we should be aiming to win the league. That's just not realistic. You know, a friend of mine, Simon Hart, who's a journalist, I think he's written some sort of, let's say, ghosted a few columns for Nev in the Eye and these sorts of things. I think there's a little bit of naivety to him, And he's a bit of a homeboy, and I think that might be why, you know, even Manchester might have been a bit far away. Although he did end up down in Southend or Dover, wasn't it? Managing, did he not end up down in Dover?
Yeah, Dover Athletic. Yeah,
yeah. Couldn't get much further away from Llandudno, I suppose. I suppose if I had a criticism of him, which would be, I'd hate to be critical of someone who's my hero. I just wished that in the last maybe 5 years, 10 years, he'd have been a bit more vocal, because he was never really embraced by the club as a...
No.
You never really saw him in the director's box. And, you know, when things have been rough, as they have, unsurprisingly, we're not going to go there, but things have been challenging in the last few years. I wish Neville would have come out and been a bit more, come on, this is Everton Football Club, this isn't good enough, and set the standards a bit more and called out some of the nonsense that was going on. But, you know, maybe he didn't feel he could, and he always had this sort of, I don't know, he wasn't really welcome, was he, at the club? He was never really welcomed back into the sort of Ken Wright theme park, I suppose. So,
yeah, you're right. He maybe could have been a bit more vocal, because it, you know, had a figurehead like him come out and been a bit more vocal about what was going on, maybe a bit more momentum would have built. But yeah, I mean,
I think so.
You know, it's one of those things, isn't it? It's sort of, I think, as everything's, I mean, we won't dwell on this again, as everything's unravelled over the last, what are you going to say, 6-8 months, it's really unravelled, and we've seen the extent of how bad things are maybe the past year. I suppose it's easy to say, well, maybe if he'd said this at that time. But yeah, no, I agree. And probably some more of the team maybe could have done that. You know, the ones with the real standards, like, you know, the players like Reedy and Southall. But just picking up on his playing career again, before we move on to your next choice, you talk about it was him and Jim Arnold, wasn't it, jostling for position. If anyone's not read his Southall's book, by the way, The Bin Man Chronicles, definitely go and read it, because it is brilliant, and it's a real eye-opener, because as a kid, yeah, he wasn't the biggest. He just played in goal, didn't he? You know, as a player, I think he was 6'1", so he wasn't the biggest of keepers, though probably big enough in the mid-80s, really. But he had this sort of tussle with Jim Arnold, but it seems there was never any animosity between the two, and Jim Arnold taught him a lot, and he's quite thankful to the experience he had there, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a humble guy. He's a really intelligent guy, and he gives a lot of his time, you know, to really good causes right now. Yeah. He's just a top bloke. I've got so much time for him, and that's why he's my favourite player, because I suppose he summarises or he encapsulates what I think about of Everton, which notably beating Manchester City, because that was my first memory. Why doesn't it happen more often?
Yeah, and you know, the label gets thrown around a lot, but he is definitely a legend. He's done it all at the club. So yeah, we'll move on to your favourite current player then. Not a million miles away from this one, really.
there you go. Spoiler alert. I mean, I'm fan of skillful players and goal scorers and pacey wingers, you know. And when I was thinking about Neville, you know, the other players that came into my head were people like Trevor Stephen, but also Dave Thomas, and then people like Duncan McKenzie, you know.
Yeah.
Duncan McKenzie in particular, because I really liked those players in the Stan Bowles type mold, you know, even Glenn Hoddle and others. So obviously I've chosen two goalkeepers, haven't I? Because the current squad, oh God, it's hard to like many of them. To me, it has to be Pickford. I mean, it just has to be Jordan Pickford. Pickford's been through everything already, hasn't he? You know, he's had 7 different managers. He gets stick. He's the same size as Neville Southall. Yeah. He's 6'1". 269 starts and only 71 clean sheets. That puts the job into perspective that he's had to perform in, and also puts Southall into perspective, I guess. I think Pickford is hugely underrated, thankfully not by Gareth Southgate. I'm not Southgate's biggest fan, but I think the selection of Pickford and sticking by Pickford shows he's actually a very good judge of a goalkeeper, if some of his other positional choices can be questioned. I really sympathise with Pickford for everything he's been through. And we talk about why did Neville stay? Well, why the bloody hell's Jordan stayed in this circus?
I was talking about that, yeah.
I mean, Jesus Christ, he must have had opportunities to leave. You know, he was, I didn't realise this until I did a bit of digging around. He was ever present, 17, 18, 18, 19 and 19, 20. He played every game. We played 38 games, and I think it was 38 games in a season.
Yeah.
you know, he's only missed 11 games in the next four seasons. He's had a lot of shit thrown at him. Yes, of course he has his issues, but, you know, keepers are meant to be mad, aren't they? Isn't that part of it? Of course, you know, he gets stick off the barcodes and he plays to the gallery there a bit. He's a great signing, a really good signing. And when you've had Koeman and Allardyce and Silver and Ancelotti, Benitez, Lampard and Dyche, I mean, your brain must be scrambled. You've had to play for them lot. And they've all picked him. Nobody's really, I mean, Ancelotti challenged him a little bit, but I also think he's kept us in the division.
Yeah.
I think the save, obviously, you look at individual saves or individual goals, you know, talk about those goals, the Kevin Brock pass and Adrian Heath and all of that. But individual saves and individual goals, do they really, you know, define that up or down, winning or going down? But that save from the Madison penalty away at Leicester, that's absolutely pivotal. We're dead if that penalty goes in. There's no doubt about that in my mind. And also, I think this one goes slightly under the radar. There was a brilliant save in the last minute against Bournemouth as well for an equaliser.
Oh, there was,
I'm not totally sure if... Did we stay up by 2 points or 3 points? But I think we would have lost... You know, we would have gone on to lose against Leicester if that penalty hadn't been saved from Madison. He's a great penalty stopper. He's done great things for England. He's proved that. I fancied him to save both of them against Man United. That's why he's in my fantasy team. obviously he didn't. And you know, the shit he got for the challenge on Van Dijk, I think he's had to cope with a lot. I think the club could have been a lot more supportive of him. And I don't think the fans give him the credit he deserves. I don't think they do. I think
he
very
does seem underappreciated, doesn't he? Sort of across the board a little bit.
I think he is. You know, he's screaming at the defenders. Well, I'd scream at the defenders. Have you seen those defenders? I mean,
this is my issue.
I'd be yelling at them all game.
Exactly. So when people are saying, oh, you know, he's constantly distracting and screaming at defenders, like, he's the one player who is genuine international class on our side.
100%.
So he's got standards that will be higher than the rest. I just believe that he has got that. And if you're seeing players who aren't meeting your standards, or, you know, you think if you have a word with them, it'll switch them back on, of course you're going to have a word. And, you know, as a keeper, you've got to find ways to keep yourself switched on as well. So if that means shouting at your players, telling them to get into position, if that keeps you switched on, well, then that's fine. And that's, you know,
absolutely.
Players have got to deal with this. This is what it's like. This is what being in a team is about. But I just think if you've got a keeper who keeps everyone on the toes and shouts at everyone, you know, it's better than having someone who just sort of sinks back and, like, just sort of blends in, and maybe, you know, then you got the risk that they don't command the box and, you know, they're not positive enough to close down a striker or make those one-on-one saves. So it's all part of the package, and I don't think anyone can really, or I don't see how anyone can complain about anything during his Everton career. He's had his moments, obviously, but
of course he has.
By and large, he's been absolutely brilliant.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then, taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Yeah, he is, you're absolutely right. He's genuine international. We've got other internationals, but, you know, he's played in major championship finals and final, you know, and he delivers. He's let no one down. And England has a great history, a long history of goalkeepers screwing up in big games. Forget just penalty misses, you know, in penalty shootouts, but we've got goalkeepers, you know, miss kicking it or dropping one into their own net. Pickford's been absolutely reliable for England, and I think he's reliable for Everton. And without him, we wouldn't be in this division. I don't think the fans appreciate him enough. But the fans, you know, the fans' heads are scrambled just like half the players, I suspect.
Yeah. On that note, we've been through all those managers as well as the players, so we're just as baffled by it. It's terrible when you put the list like that, isn't it? It's like
seven. And it's not even a – they don't even follow logically. I mean, there is no – I remember in the early days of Business Matters when we were still doing it as a trio. I mean, there is not a business plan in the world that goes from Ronald Koeman to Allardyce to Silver.
No.
I mean, that's just going completely, you know, turning left, turning right. There's no and doubling back on yourself. It's just ludicrous. And, you know, Pickford – I mean, if I'm critical of him, the last time I saw him live was Tottenham at home, and he seemed to be trying to hit everything with a 3-iron, 250 yards, and half of them went out of play. And I just wish more and more he'd play the simple ball, but he doesn't trust his defenders because he gives it to Tarkowski and he just gives it the long diag anyway, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, he does try and whack the skin off everything. And I think he... Yes, I'd like him to calm down a little, but being Everton's goalkeeper right now is not a calm experience for anyone, I guess.
No, not at all. We'll move on to your...
yes, shall we?
Before we go any more into that rabbit hole. Yeah, we'll move on to, relatively happier times, somewhere online, to your favourite loan player. And now there's been several iterations of this rule. I'm going to say, if they were ever on loan, they could be your favourite loan player. You don't have to have just
Thank
been
you.
Loan player. So yours is?
Yeah, there's a spoiler there. Yeah, look, it has to be Lukaku for me. I mean, it just has to be. What a player. Again, massively undervalued by all fans, not just Everton fans, Chelsea fans, Man United fans, perhaps not Roma fans, or perhaps not Inter Milan fans, but what a player. And it's so tinged with disappointment because... I was lucky enough to got invited to Roberto Martinez Welcome to Everton dinner, gala dinner nonetheless, Aintree Racecourse in October 2013, and it was such a gala affair that they had blue sort of champagne cocktails beforehand. It was absolutely extraordinary.
Yeah,
and I somehow was on the table numero uno. And I was sat next to big Bobby Martinez, right?
And some invite there.
It was great. I tell you what, it was a fantastic invite. And I was incredibly grateful for it. And I spent most of the evening talking to Martinez, chatting to him in Spanish, because I like to do that occasionally. And he wanted to talk in English. So it was quite a funny conversation we were going on. But he told me the story. He told me the Lukaku story about how he got it. And he basically wanted Demba Ba. And he phoned up Chelsea and he wanted Demba Ba. And he said, no, you can't have Demba Ba because Demba Ba's staying here. But what about Lukaku? Because Mourinho had, at the time, he had Demba Ba, Fernando Torres, Carragher's bit on the side, if you remember, and Samuel Eto'o. And Rom wasn't going to get a game. And he'd just been on loan at West Brom. And... they were going to send him back to West Brom, but Mourinho said to Martinez, you can have Lukaku if you want Lukaku. Well, yeah, of course. I didn't think he was going to be available. I thought he'd be part of your plans. Yeah. No.
He had a great season at West Brom, didn't he, on loan?
He did. And I think he scored, did he not score a hat-trick in his last game? They drew 5-5 with
United.
Maybe he scored 3, I don't know. But he'd had a good season. He'd been very popular. Why wouldn't he be? The Baggies haven't had anyone like him for a very, very long time. And so apparently this conversation was going on during the international break. It was at the end of, obviously, the end of August, you know, the transfer window. And Belgium were playing Scotland, apparently. And Kevin Morales was with the Belgian squad, as was Lukaku. And Martinez phoned up Morales and said, I need you to have a word with Lukaku and tell him it's great at Everton. He said, well, he sat right next to me. He's in my room. We're watching a film now. I'm going to tell him. So apparently he told him. And that was it. And Rom came. And what a player. I mean, he scored goals. He was a you know, bulldozer. He was a real great left foot. He wasn't lazy at all. He scored 87 goals in 155 games. Thank you. Can we have one of those, please? Never replaced him. Never, ever replaced him. I think I was also bizarrely at that ridiculous AGM where Mashiri told his voodoo story.
Yeah. How did that, what was the atmosphere in the room like when he said that? Because it's just bizarre.
Well, it was at the time where we still thought he was a bit of a maverick, and he was just sort of, oh, that's funny, funny old Mashiri, as opposed to lunatic Mashiri. Yeah. It was absurd. And he was a talent, and he is a talent, and he's never quite managed to do it at any of the clubs that he's gone on to. And it's really sad, because I think if we'd have been able to keep him, yes, of course, Koeman kept him for one season, but couldn't resist the allure of Man United and 75 million quid. But where did that go? Yeah. For all of Richie, you know, Richie, fine, but we've never replaced him. We've never replaced his goals. And at those times, you know, I tend to see more Everton games away from home than at home, just because of geography and where I live. And I remember him scoring the winner away at West Ham in, I think it was the end of, with the end of that loan season, in 93-4, I think it must have, sorry, 2013.
Yeah.
No, sorry. It was 2014-15. But he scored in like the third minute of added time in front of the away fans at Old Upton Park, as it was. And we'd come from 1-0 down to win 2-1. And that was a limbs experience. And Rom scored. And then I remember him scoring, because obviously I live in Bournemouth, for those who don't know. And I've never seen us win at Bournemouth, apart from the FA Cup tie, when we won 2-0 in that fateful 2015-16 season, when he then misses the bloody pen in the semi-final against United.
Is that when Joel saved his penalty in that one? Did Joel save
in the Bournemouth game? In the cup tie. Yes, yeah. I think so. Yes. And because it was Bournemouth, we actually had the end behind the goal, because they give you more tickets because they have to, rather than sticking 10 of you in the corner, which they normally have. And anyone, yes, I am interested in a couple of spares for the Bournemouth game on Easter Saturday, because it's 20 minutes up the road. But, you know, I think we've been given 33 tickets and they've all gone, and you needed 5 billion credits. But that was a cup tie. It was the 5:15 kickoff on the telly. Went to that. And he was just a goal scorer that you could build a team around. And in my opinion, we should have built a team around, and we should have had, you know, okay, we had got into Europe, but we should have been able to keep him, and we should have been able to encourage him. And make him feel like, you know, there was a future there for him in European football. And with his goals, who knows where it would have led. It certainly wouldn't have led to where we are now. So I miss him, and I rated him, and he's my favourite loan player.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. He could score every type of goal as well, couldn't he? He scored pretty much everything. I think Jack may have picked him as his favourite loan player. And the one that always stands out for me is the one against Bournemouth at home. Funnily enough.
Oh, okay, yeah.
In like the first 30 seconds, it's just a wonderful hit and just sort of set up that game lovely, which was a hell of a game, by the way. But yeah, it just...
If you see, you know, that cup tie when Brighton were in Rome recently and Lewis Dunk decided to try and do a bit of messy skill on the touchline and missed it, strangely. And Rom just cut in three touches, goal. You knew he was going to score.
Yeah.
You know, in on goal, cutting in off the right wing onto his left foot, he's always going to score.
Yeah.
Brilliant talent.
And you don't realise what a luxury that is at the time, do you?
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. Good choice, though. Move on then, finally, to your favourite blue, which is going to be your favourite Evertonian or your favourite thing about Everton.
Yeah, difficult. This is a really difficult one. I thought about just blue. Right, just the shirt, really, because that less about the crest, less about the stupid Latin motto that, you know, we should have thrown in the bin a long time ago. But you know, the blue shirt, that's kind of sums Everton up for me, the royal blue jersey, if you will. But I went with the Winslow in the end, because I love the place. I just it's my happy place. I've always said that, largely because I'm there before the match rather than after the match. And it's full of anticipation, large Jameson, and with no ice, which you have to specify, otherwise they put ice in it, which is criminal. And just with your mates, or, you know, with my kids, my dad, friends, whatever, seeing a few former players in there as well, you know, it's just it feels, do you know what, sometimes the Winslow feels more like home than Goodison Park at times, and particularly a night game. You know, getting in there early-ish, sort of 5:30, 6 before a night game, and people have got their tables, and the stupid videos are on, you know, the great games and the Duncan Fergusons and the songs. And it's, yeah, it, I don't know how that'll ever be replaced at Bramley Moor. And Dave, who runs it now, does a great job. I always go in the small little room, not the big one. But it's just, it, I mean, I like the brick and, you know, the other pubs in and around the ground, but the Winslow's always been my kind of pre-match boozer of choice. And it's just that optimism, which rarely is fulfilled once you get inside and you find yourself 2-0 down or whatever. But yeah, it's just full of blues. And, you know, occasionally I can remember a derby. Obviously, away fans go in, don't they? And no exception, and even more so on Derby Day. But these were some Reds who, amusingly, were Scandinavian. I didn't know whether they were from Norway. But this guy was next to me, and I have this sort of technique of managing to get to the bar before others pushing your way in and all of that. And I'd got to the front. This guy was getting served. He was having, what, a dozen pints or something. And it came to, whatever, 30 quid or something. And didn't have any cash. And they weren't taking cards at that point in time. And this, he didn't know what to do. It was really quite funny. I was there with my £10 note saying, you know, 2 pints and a large Jameson. Thank you very much. So, yeah, I love the Winslow. It'll be missed. I don't know what'll happen to the old place.
I mean, that's a thing, isn't it? It's sort of, so while all the, everyone's sort of concentrating on moving from Goodison and the ground and seeing the game from a different, completely different place, there's everything around it as well. There's people's pre-match, there's the chippies, there's the pubs. Yes. It's like that sort of whole ecosystem. It's probably just going to die out, isn't it? Unless, I mean, I don't know what the latest is on the Goodison legacy thing, but given the way the ground's going and the finances, not sure that's really going to happen. So you kind of think, yeah, they're kind of just going to be sort of left on their own, aren't they, to sort of see whatever happens. And it would be, that pub in particular has got such a big place in Everton's history because of its proximity to the ground.
Absolutely.
It would be a shame if that just disappeared.
Yeah. Yeah, and also, it's mad.
Yeah, and just the thing about you sort of saying it's your happy place at Goodison, I think this is something we've all had to do a lot more over the last few years, is you kind of separate the before and after to the 90 minutes in the ground. So you can have a nice time beforehand where, as you say, there's that little bit of optimism. No matter who you're playing, you've still got that today could be the day. Whatever happens in the 90 minutes, that's either brilliant or terrible. There's very, very few times in the middle. But then after the game as well, you can sort of go back in and kind of decompress in that environment as well. So if you go to the pub after the game, you're not generally as riled as you were in the ground, and you can kind of settle down, deconstruct everything, or just talk about something else completely. So I think for anyone who does go to the pub before and after or whatever, it is a very sort of special part of match day, isn't it? And as you said, the Winslow is a big part of Everton match day for a lot of people.
It is, and not wishing to blow smoke up the Blue Room's arse, one of the things I really enjoy about your post-matches, typically in the Denby, right, post-match, people come and arrive at different times, but you know, you genuinely get the sense that you're back in the boozer talking about the game, and you're doing so with quite an amazing amount of rationality and calmness after it. That's possibly because you've had a long walk, and possibly because you've then had a pint to calm you down. But you're right, that it's really part of the match experience, less so the straight outside the ground instant match reaction. I prefer a little moment. My instant match reaction is normally, you know, unspeakable. the fact that by the time you guys have got to the Denby, you're kind of largely rational about it. Although of late, I've seen that even Matt's getting quite critical and quite upset about things.
Yeah, when Matt's getting a bit angry about stuff, you know things are pretty bad.
He's a good barometer. He's a very calm, rational, reasonable human being. And when he's cross, I think, oh, it's okay. I'm all right to be angry because Matt's angry. So, yeah. You're right. The boozer makes an important, you know, it's an important part of that full-on match day experience.
Yeah, and it will be interesting with the ground move, sort of what sort of pubs pop up or what replaces people's match day experience. Because I guess, you know, it's that little bit closer to town. It's that little bit more walkable to town, the new ground. So it could be very fragmented unless you know, its own ecosystem built up. Obviously, the club will want us all to go in the ground, but
It's not going to happen, is it? I don't think it happens. You know, you tend to away matches. You find, you know, where the away pub is, and
yeah,
maybe, you know, Bournemouth, for example. I don't think you can even get a bevy in the away end, which is nonsense.
I've got a story about that. So I went one time. I went to Bournemouth. I think it was when we drew 2-2. We were 2-0 up with about 15 minutes left, and Baines gets sent off. Or Richarlison, was it Richarlison got sent off? Baines gives a penalty away. I think it was that game.
Right.
But I left with Dave at about 6:30 in the morning, I think. Or it was really, really early.
Yes.
We picked up Sarah and a mate on the way.
Yes.
I think it took us about 8 hours to get down there. By the time I got into the ground, because we got stuck, got really bad traffic. I got into the ground at 2:45, and the girl behind the counter was, I just said, can I just have a pint, please? And she's like, no, we can't serve alcohol 15 minutes before the game. I was like, I've just been on like an 8-hour journey. I need a pint. Can you just serve me? No, we can't serve alcohol 15 minutes before the game. She was like RoboCop, and it just blew me mind completely. Did get one at half time, but yeah,
Okay. I'm sure the last time I was there, they weren't serving. You could only get an Americano or something. Who wants an Americano at the football? God's sake. I mean, there is on the old Christchurch Road, there's plenty of boozers where you can get a drink and 10-minute walk to the ground, but whatever.
Yeah,
it's I just think people drink it in the stadiums, maybe at halftime, yes. But I think you tend to go to a boozer and then get into the ground with 15, 20 minutes before kickoff. I mean, Goodison itself is empty.
Yeah.
You know, 2:45, it's empty.
Yeah. And there's also the fact that the people who you sort of go to the pub with probably don't sit in the same stand as you. So there's that issue
precisely.
As well.
So precisely.
I think it's a big ask. But yeah, I think it would be a shame if there's not that sort of, I'm sure there will be that buzz around the ground sort of leading up to kickoff, but maybe not a couple of hours before. Everyone will be in different places, but we'll see. Anyway,
it's also a sort of it's not one sided, is it? But there's not many points of entry into Bramley Moor.
No,
you know, unless I'm going to get my pedalos working from coming across from Egremont. Having a fleet of pedalos.
I am thinking of starting a petition to get a ferry across.
A Mastay
ferry would be a belter. everyone park at Teakham, get the boat across, be brilliant.
No one would fall in. Absolutely no one would fall in.
Oh, not at all. Roger, that was brilliant. Thanks for that. I appreciate it. As ever, four great choices there, and lovely to talk about it with you and sort of share those memories with you. Thanks to everyone who's listening. If anyone wants to get involved, do drop us a DM at the Blue Room EFC on Twitter. That's been Old New Borrowed Blue. Thanks for listening. Up the Toffees.
Sports Social Podcast Network.